Hi, I'm Simon Devereaux, Director of Global Talent Development at Framestore, and welcome back to the Framestore podcast, a learning and talent development focused podcast made by Framestore for Framestore. Today's episode is the first part of our double bill recruitment special with Framestore recruiters who support all eight of our global studios. In part one, we kick off with Mumbai, Melbourne, and London, where we chat to Annie Barlow, London-based VFX recruiter, Nikunj Barot, head of recruitment for our Mumbai studio, and Lindsay Cowie, senior recruitment manager, Framestore Melbourne. So here we go. Episode 42, part one of the Framestore podcast, our recruitment special. Enjoy. Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Framestore podcast, episode 42, part one. Every 2 weeks, we invite both a guest from our global Framestore community and a co-host with a keen interest in our guest's role, craft or career path, and we let the magic happen. On this week's pod, we continue 2024's mix-up with another two-part special episode, where we're switching our focus from internal support to external. We know that the pod has a decent non-Framestore subscriber base, so we thought in light of the current climate, post-pandemic and post-strike, plus the fact that we have a lot of folk either looking for opportunities or simply need a steer career-wise, that we'd host a Framestore podcast double bill recruitment special with part one out today, chatting to our London, Mumbai and Melbourne recruiters. Then on part two out on Thursday, checking in with our US and Canadian talent acquisition experts. So no dailies questions, mentor shout outs, favorite meals or Spotify playlist suggestions. I know you're all very disappointed about that. Just plain honest to goodness, supportive careers advice, pointers, best practice and top tips for anyone out there looking to break into the industry or have their eye on their next move, potentially joining the mighty Framestore. So let's do the intros. First, we have Annie Barlow, VFX recruiter at our London studio, formerly a studio runner in 2014, quickly rising through the ranks of the Framestore talent team. Annie has almost 9 years of skin in the game, hiring Framestore talent. We have Nikunj Barot, head of recruitment for our Mumbai studio. Nikunj joined Framestore at the end of 2022 with a background in e-learning, tech and product hiring, and has made a huge impact at Framestore Mumbai, growing the team in one of our newest studios. And speaking of new studios, we have Lindsay Cowie, Senior Recruitment Manager for Framestore Melbourne. Lindsay has worked in a number of recruitment and HR roles across academic institutions, nonprofits, and banks, joining Framestore in the summer of 2022 via Method Studios. So there you go. Slightly less convoluted introductions. How are you all? Welcome to the pod.
Good, thank you.
All good.
Happy to be here.
You're doing good.
Feeling good.
Thanks for inviting us, Simon.
No, you're very, very welcome. And it's good to have you. And I'm excited about this one because there's quite a lot of podcasts out there and there's quite a lot of resources being put out there by a number of different institutions related to careers advice and support because of the obvious climate that we're going through as industry. And there's a lot of people out there open to work. So it just felt like a responsibility of the Framestore podcast to do something like this, where we not just speak to a few recruiters, we cover all bases from all eight of our global studios. And you're covering one end of the time zones today, hence why Annie and myself are up at some ungodly hour, which we won't get into for our listeners. And Lindsay and Nikunj, you are seeing your day out after the long bank holiday weekend. So I'm really excited to get into it. Before we get into it, I just wanted to kind of get you all to introduce yourselves first. So could you, even though I've introed you in very, very broad brushstrokes, could you kind of introduce yourselves and tell us a bit more about your roles at Framestore, you know, the type of roles you're recruiting, the kind of level you're working at. So perhaps let's go in reverse order as per the my convoluted intro and perhaps kick off with Lindsay. Could you briefly intro yourself, please?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm Lindsay Cowie, and despite the accent, I am down here in Melbourne. I've been in the studio for about 3 years and have had the opportunity to recruit across all levels and across pretty much all departments in the studio. What else should I say?
Is that it?
Do you want me to go into then what we're recruiting for?
No, that's for that's at the end, you see. At the end, you get to do all the kind of shameless shout-outs. Cool. So 3 years in the game. And yeah, you would have cruised that kind of transition from Method to Framestore as part of the the Method acquisition.
In fact, we were the last studio to join the Framestore pipeline. And so that happened at the end of 2023, where we fully are on the pipeline and starting to share projects. So it's been a really exciting time with lots of changes. But yeah, we're really looking forward to working more closely with the team globally.
Cool. And how's the how is the market in Australia at the moment? Do you feel you're busy at the moment? I mean, again, we've been through a lot as industry, and there's an assumption that it's quiet, but I see a lot of movement on various social platforms. I won't keep plugging them. I feel like we should be sponsored by LinkedIn at this stage of the podcast, so I'm not going to give them too many shout outs. But
absolutely, we have quite a few projects kind of wrapping up, and several more about to kick off. So things are definitely picking up from a recruitment point of view. We're starting to get our crew sheets in for upcoming projects. So yeah, a lot more hiring to come, I think, in the coming months, which is exciting. My team has been itchy to get back in the game for a while now. So we're looking forward to it.
Good to hear. They're waiting in the wings.
Yeah.
And how about you, Nikunj? Thank you, Lindsay. Tell us a bit more about you, Nikunj, and your role.
All right, so it's been a little over a year for me at Framestore Mumbai, and the journey has been super exciting. So what I do at Framestore is I primarily manage all the recruiting efforts for Films and Episodic for Mumbai Studio. And yeah, it's been really great. Overall, I come with about more than 15 years of experience in talent acquisition. So my job is to help Framestore bring in some awesome talent at Mumbai.
Brilliant. And have you found the transition from your previous role, as explained in the intro, to the wacky world of visual effects?
All right. So the creativity part was something new. Understanding the industry, understanding the pipeline was something new. And as a matter of fact, that's something that really excited me when Framestore happened to me back in 2022, November. And that was something that was really exciting, trying out and exploring a new domain altogether. I'd been doing technology hiring for about 14 years, and it was kind of getting monotonous. So this was one of the reasons I decided to join Framestore, because it was a new industry altogether. There is a common aspect here, which is technology, because we do the kind of stuff that we do is again technology enabled, technology oriented, right? We work with some of the latest technologies in animation and visual effects as well. So that's the common aspect here. So there was something new as well as, you know, something common. So yeah, it's super amazing so far.
Yes, it's funny you say that. We just came off the back of the last episode with members of our labs team, and they talked a lot about the intersection between creativity and technology. And you often kind of not forget that, but it is quite an important part of what we do, isn't it? You've got that kind of pure creativity and amazing finished product, and then you've got all the kind of technology that kind of underpins that work, as well as all of the interpersonal skills, which we'll get into as we go through the this particular episode. But yeah, thank you for that intro, Nikunj. Good to know, and glad you're settling in well. I can't believe it's been best part of a couple of years already. And Annie, you're our longest serving recruiter on the podcast, having started as a runner. We always have one person at Framestore on the podcast who started as a runner, and you're the one.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm Annie Barlow. I'm VFX recruiter at Framestore London. I don't have a recruitment background. I've kind of grown into my job role here. I've been nurtured into going into a talent position. When I started Framestore as a runner, I thought I wanted to get into production. But I kind of realized how big Framestore was as a studio. And I saw on my time on reception, I saw recruitment going to all these kind of you know, VFX festivals, going on trips and everything. And I thought, God, that looks fun. What are those guys doing? So I pinned down Amy Smith, our global head of recruitment, for a conversation one day. And yeah, kind of the rest is history. After that chat, I got the opportunity to go on secondment and be a recruitment coordinator for, I think, 6 months. And then I was the launchpad recruiter, so doing all the entry level job opportunities. So I was in charge of running the internship, any entry level jobs such as production assistant, ATDs, render support, all that sort of stuff. So yeah, I was really able to kind of ease in slowly and nicely, and a nice kind of progression into my career as to where I am today as more of a kind of senior VFX recruiter, looking after all various different departments within the film and episodic division, FPS, our pre-visualization team, and most recently I've started picking up the comp team, comp department, hiring for our integrated advertising division. So yeah, that's me.
Love that.
Up to date.
I love that. And I love hearing those stories. It's interesting, actually. I mean, sorry to keep talking about the last episode. We talked about that almost kind of like a historic journey now, isn't it? Compared, you know, pre-post-pandemic, I think, with running programs becoming kind of less and less. And I know in London, for example, we don't have the running program anymore. And that was always a really nice kind of, narrative. You know, you come in, and there's lots of people in very senior positions here, right? Including yourself, Annie, who started out on reception as runners, are now, you know, in really senior positions.
Yeah, definitely.
We had this whole conversation on the last podcast about how I think that still happens, but kind of in a different way. If the person, like you said, is proactive, goes, hey, wait a minute, that looks interesting, I'll get involved in that, or ask a question, or drop, as most people do, Amy Smith, an email. By the way, if anyone out there is playing Framestore Podcast Bingo, there's normally an Amy Smith mention at some point. So that's one tick in the box for our bingo players out there. But yeah, thank you for sharing that, Annie, and thank you all for your brief intros. Now, Annie, staying with you, obviously, my next question is around, you know, how you got your start in recruitment and talent acquisition, and you've kind of lent beautifully into that. So thank you for the segue. It's like you've had the questions in advance.
Sorry, I took your question away from me.
I love it. I love it. It makes for a more fluid episode when I get the nice link ups. But you know, how did you find those early time in the recruitment team? You know, what did you enjoy about that role? You know, because you saw it, I guess, from a distance, right? Oh, you've got all of these recruiters going off to FMX and Seagraph, and then the reality of doing the work. You know, what were your early experiences?
It was obviously more of like an ad hoc role. You were there to support the recruitment team. So I was scheduling interviews. I was, sorting out travel for when they went to, you know, events such as FMX. And then I'd start shadowing interviews slowly. And then also a big part of the recruitment process isn't just, the recruitment team. Yeah. It's not just hiring and recruiting. It's also about networking and kind of spreading the, you know, awareness of Framestore and the visual effects industry. So inviting students in to do presentations. So doing, I had the chance to do my first presentation, kind of public speaking, which was terrifying. but now I've got many of those under my belt. So yeah, it was more of like an ad hoc kind of just learning, learn as you go, which is something that I think Framestore really good at is, you know, entry level routes in and kind of being able to learn on the job. It definitely gave me that opportunity, which is the reason, you know, where I am today. So yeah, that's what I got to do in those kind of early years. And as I said earlier, you know, I then got moved into a launchpad recruiter position, which hadn't actually been opened before, but I thought it was a really nice way to kind of ease into doing more of the complex hiring. You know, it was nice just speaking to junior artists who were kind of new to the industry and kind of being that helping hand for them, which is another reason I went into recruitment, is because I enjoy helping people, and I definitely enjoyed helping the younger talent and seeing them go in and then, you know, in a couple of years time being like, oh my god, I've been on set and I've done this and I've, you know, had the opportunity to work with this person and I've learned all this stuff. And I was like, that's what makes me happy.
And like you said, Annie, I mean, the thing about being a VFX recruiter is it's more than just a bums on seats type role, right? I mean, if you work in in insurance or something, you know, you're in your recruiter, you're just going, oh, vacancy fill it, you know. In visual effects, there is that arm to the role where there is that nurturing, that supportive, you know, you're still part of that that continued journey. You're not just kind of bringing them in. And actually pre-interview, right, you've got the whole speculative conversations you're having all the time, right? So you're reaching out to people, like say you're networking, you're not just kind of going, oh, somebody has either left or been promoted and there's a gap and we're filling it. You know, it's a lot more proactive is the word, if that's fair to say.
It definitely is. Like we're constantly kind of speaking to people, and it all essentially comes down to the end of the day, you know, what work we have in, what projects we have in, and the positions that we have open up. Obviously, firstly, when a project comes in, we look at the internal crew and then what we need to hire for. So, you know, I might be speaking to someone, it happens all the time, speaking to someone for kind of a few months, 6 months, even a year, and then eventually something lands that comes in and I contact them and I'm like, are you available? And yes, I'll be available in, you know, months time. And sometimes it all works out, but sometimes it, you know, it is like a big kind of game of Tetris almost, just trying to slot everything in, you know, with the show schedules that we have, with an artist's availability. So yeah, it's not just bums on seats filling positions. It's nature of the industry. People work with contracts. People are just constantly going from vendor to vendor, and we're, you know, as a recruitment team, kind of in constant connection and conversations with the artists. It's what we're normally doing.
Excellent. So super fluid. I love that. Thank you, Annie. And Nikunj, you know, you mentioned earlier, 15 years in the recruitment game. You know, what drew you to the role of, you know, talent acquisition, recruitment? You know, what excites you about what you do?
All right. So just to give you a quick brief about my professional journey, after I finished my graduation, my degree in computer science from Mumbai University. Though I studied computer science, but by the time I was in the final year of my graduation, I learned system analysis, I learned about coding, but by the end of my graduation, I knew even if I become a programmer, I would make a very bad programmer. So let me not just, you know, start making application that would just crash in no time. So I was exploring other opportunities outside the technology domain, and that's when I got my first job with a London-based multinational. It was a marketing and sales company. I spent about 4 years working with them as a business development manager. That was my first stint. All right, my second assignment was with a recruitment consulting firm, and I joined them as a business development guy. My main job over there was client acquisition, acquiring more clients, growing the business, you know, looking into the growth aspect of the organization. But that was back in the year 2010, and the world was going through a bad recession, if you remember, 2009, 2010.
There's always something bad going on.
Yeah, I mean, it's a nightmare, right? And so we had, we didn't have too many projects. And I still remember though I was a business development guy, I would sit with the recruitment team and I would just talk to them and just observe them, you know, just hear them talking to the candidates they are reaching out to, you know, looking at their outreach emails and hearing their calls. And that started exciting me. Another thing was the company where I worked, they specialize in technology hiring, right? Mm-hmm. So it's technology and recruitment. So I already was well aware of the technology aspect. All right. And all I had to do was to learn the nitty-gritty of recruitment. So started spending more time with recruiters. And I thought, I mean, it would be great if I try my hand at technology hiring. And in my free time, actually, the BD guy started spending time on recruitment, and I started loving it. Interacting with people, talking to people, helping candidates getting better opportunities, you know, better career options. That was the best part actually about the job. It was the most satisfying part, I would rather say. I spent about 8 years primarily working with various technology companies, large IT enterprises, startups, helping them build tech and product teams. After that, again, you know, I worked with an e-learning company. The company was, again, a startup going through a hyper-growth phase. So they were hiring aggressively and rigorously. Worked with them for about five and a half years, helping them build various teams. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, so it had been already about 14 years in tech and product hiring, and that's when Frameshore happened. I'll be very honest. When people from Frameshore reached out, being an outsider, if I may say, I did not spend any time working on VFX or animation projects, right? So was not very much well acquainted or well aware of what Frameshore does. And I asked them like for a day's time that, hey, you know, give me a day's time. Let me get back. First thing that I did was I went through the website of Frameshore and looked at the kind of projects they have been working on. And I was sold on that, right? Yeah. the kind of the work we've been working on, all the projects that we've done, all the animation and VFX, work we've done. And I'm like, whoa, these are the guys who have done VFX for Gravity. All right. So these are people who have been working on, you know, projects like Guardians of the Galaxy and all the best films and episodic projects. And wanted to try my hand. And I'm like, okay, this is something really, really, worth exploring. If I really want to try out a new domain, a new industry, this is something which looks very interesting. And that's when I decided to take a plunge and jumped into it.
Amazing. And again, like, you know, it almost feels like your career's led up to this moment. So you got all that technology recruitment under your belt. And now it's like, right, we need to kind of bring the creativity bit to get in, you know, the jigsaw piece. And here we are. So I think that's great. Yeah, great career.
Absolutely.
Behind you, Nikunj. But yeah, it's all to play for at Framestore now, which is great. Thank you.
Thanks.
And Lindsay, last but not least on this question, again, how did you get started? What's quite interesting so far is it's like my role. Nobody ever says they want to be a recruiter when they grow up, right? But everybody has this lovely route into working in recruitment and talent, you know. But Lindsay, are you any different?
I'm exactly the same. I walked into a recruitment agency when I'd moved to the UK with a degree in advertising, looking for an advertising role. And, they kind of said, oh, yeah, we'll look for those for you. But in the meantime, have you ever thought about recruitment? And sort of, I guess, the rest is history. So, throughout my career, I've had opportunities to work more on the HR side of things or more on, you know, career services at universities. But it's always kind of been in that recruitment space. And I love it. You know, I think I've got the best job in the world. It's especially now that I've found VFX, which was about 3 years ago when a former colleague from that same recruitment agency who had got into VFX called me up and and convinced me to come across. So I've learned a lot in the last 3 years, but I just feel so lucky to get to work with so many just passionate, creative, you know, brilliant people. So.
Yeah, thank you, Lindsay. And yeah, you are learning all the time, aren't you? I mean, that's why I love doing this podcast, is I get to have these great conversations, not just your good selves, but, you know, the last few years leaning into these discussions has been an absolute privilege for me personally. And actually, I also have an advertising degree and I have a similar career trajectory to you, as I have that under my belt. And then I fell into a HR role and then the rest is history. I'm the success that I am now.
Podcast extraordinaire.
Don't believe the hype. Exactly. Who'd have thought it? Anyway. So big question to all of you now. So we're into the kind of podcast proper now. So thank you. It's good that people get to know you on the podcast before we just dive into the hardcore questions. But before we do that, I want to kind of get a sense from you all about the kind of the current recruitment trends in visual effects and animation, not just within Framestore. I think obviously I want to have a focus on Framestore because that's why we're here today, but even in the industry, I mean, what, it's a very, very broad question, but does anybody want to kick us off in terms of, you know, what are some of the recruitment trends that you're seeing?
Yeah, obviously at the moment, you know, there's kind of different trends happening because of what we've been through as an industry and, you know, the whole film and TV and everything industry with terms of what's happened after the strikes. So, you know, things are picking up very slowly, but they are picking up. Framestore's in a fortunate position. We have work in. We have quite a bit of work in as well, which is really good. And we're busy in London. And thankfully, I've been able to make some hiring, do some hirings this year for various departments within film and our integrated advertising team.
Yeah.
So that's really, really positive. But yeah, obviously there is, you know, there are people, unfortunately, sadly, out of work at the moment. And, you know, my aim is to just kind of connect with all those people. I'm getting lots of messages. I'm trying on LinkedIn. I'm trying to get back to everyone. But yeah, obviously, it's been tricky. And I hope that, during summer and by the end of the year, things will be kind of back on track more.
Yeah. Good to hear. It's kind of picking up, which is a good thing.
Yeah.
And nice to hear that you're connecting with people who are out there looking for work. And, you know, we have that lovely green kind of badge on LinkedIn now where we know who's
open to work,
pursuing opportunities, right? So that's really good to hear. How things in Melbourne at the moment, Lindsay? I mean, again, you know, different part of the world, same industry. And anything similar to what Annie said, or different, less busy, more busy, similar?
Look, I think compared to some, Framestore have, weathered the last few months fairly well. I think there's probably a little bit of a dip for us, but certainly as we look towards the fourth quarter of the year, things are looking to be coming back with a vengeance, I think. So yeah, we're looking forward to doing quite a bit of hiring, and there is a longer term goal to grow the Melbourne studio, which is exciting. You know, there's some favorable conditions from a subsidy point of view and things that make Melbourne an attractive place to put work. And yeah, we're looking forward to growing the team later this year.
You have a beach, right? So, you know, that is kind of part of the value proposition for Framestore Melbourne. How about, I mean, clearly a value proposition in Mumbai as well, Nikunj. You know, I hear the canteen and it's doing great guns in the Framestore studio, but joking aside, tell me a bit about what's going on in Mumbai.
Last 1 year has been pretty amazing. If I say the first half of 2023, considering the fact that Mumbai being relatively a new studio and Framestore family, we had great growth-based hiring plans, and we were working on those plans. To be specific, our Mumbai studio grew to about 80% last year in terms of headcount. The plan was to go 2x, all right, but still we managed to get about 80% headcount augmentation done towards the end of 2023. Second half of the year, as we all know, because of the external market conditions, we had to slow down a little, but we still continued hiring as per our strategic hiring plans. But this was not like hiring in volumes, hiring for artistic roles. This was primarily more of strategic hiring, building the top layers within the departments, like hiring at supervisor, lead, or HOD level. That's something we've been doing in the last 6 months. And we're all looking forward to the next few months. Things are getting better, as Annie rightly said. It's slow but steady.
Yeah.
And I personally feel it's just the silence before the storm.
Excellent. Well, this is quite a well-timed podcast then, because things are picking up slowly, so we can get people primed for when it all kind of blows up proper. What's quite interesting, actually, is listening to you all is, you know, I forget that, you know, Mumbai, we talk about new member of the Framestore family, but literally it was a from scratch studio, right, Nikunj? I mean, it was a brand new studio that was built. Whereas, you know, Melbourne, it was part of the Method acquisition. And again, similar experience in terms, but a different kind of recruiting in many ways, right? Because Nikunj, you know, you had to absolutely build from, you know, like, what do you call it? Not aggressive hiring, but volume recruiting. You're building a studio, you're building a culture, you're building a workforce. And that's quite interesting. And you obviously got London being kind of the OG studio. God, I say OG too much on the podcast. I need to change my rhetoric a bit. But really interesting, kind of three very different types of studio, but still under the same umbrella. Is anyway, that's my observation. I'm always doing that, just brain farting everywhere. So let's get into the questions then. That's why people are here. And there's a lot to get through. So I'm going to kick things off, and I'm going to start with you, Lindsay, on kind of universal skills, if there's such a thing. What do you look for in terms of qualities and universal skills when recruiting candidates at Framestore? What is the, you know, we talk a lot about Framestore culture on the pod, about, you know, family and people and all of that good stuff. But what's your take on that question, Lindsay?
Yeah, I mean, I think essentially we want to find people that are, you know, passionate and committed to the work that they're doing, whether they're in an artist or a support role. Looking for people that are, you know, interested in Framestore, that are interested in the work that we do, that are really looking to improve, you know, open to feedback, and I think accurate about kind of explaining the skill set and their current level and things like that. So we want people that, you know, have a good understanding of their skill set and what they're bringing to Framestore.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, solid communication skills is always going to be key. You know, if they're artists, they're going to be, you know, needing to talk about their work and their shots and, you know, communicating with supervisors. So that's certainly something that we look for in an interview is, you know, how do you present yourself? And, you know, I think we're a studio that, you know, people like to have a laugh as well. And so it's, you know, somebody that's going to kind of fit into to our culture. But then also, you know, we've with a lot of our diversity and inclusion, you know, thinking about culture ads as well, about, you know, not necessarily the fit, but the ad as well. So
Yeah, I love the term culture ad. I just ran our unconscious bias workshop last week, and I'm fresh from that, you having that conversation around the difference between culture fit and culture ad, and getting that balance right. Interesting, you mentioned passion, because it comes up a lot. You know, you must be passionate. You know, how do you measure passion? How do you know someone's passionate? I mean, you talked about interests and some of the communication skills, but how do you measure passion at such an early stage in the recruitment process?
I think for me, it's really looking at the effort that somebody's putting into improving, to you know, developing a new skill, and a lot of times it's really the way they talk about their work, and you can really see that, you know, even if they're talking about a challenge or something that was a struggle, you can see just kind of that drive and that desire to get better and desire to improve their craft. So I think that's what I would see.
I like that. What do you think, Annie? Agree?
Yeah, totally. I mean,
not that you would disagree, but.
No, yeah, it's all of those things that Lindsay has mentioned. Obviously, just, you know, it's cliche, but the soft skills, it's really important. You know, we need people who can communicate clearly, who, you know, are friendly at the end of the day. Yeah. You know, you've got to be a team player. Yeah, Framestore's, you know, a big team, especially in London. So you need to be, you know, a reliable person to make sure that we get the amazing work done. And yeah, being passionate is definitely one of those traits that we look out for sure. There's no point doing it if you're not passionate.
Well, exactly, right? You'd assume that. But yeah. But if you, I guess, does that start to your point earlier, actually, Annie, about networking and having those earlier conversations? Are you measuring that from kind of that first interaction, perhaps even before you've actually sat down and interviewed them or gone through their reel?
Yeah, I mean, there's, you know, I meet lots of people through networking, whether it's a grad show or a visual effects event, and there'll be people that I meet, you know, more than once, a couple of times, who come up and just, you know, go out of their way to be like, hi, it's so and so again, you know, just making you aware that I'm here, and, you know, I'll be looking for, you know, I'll be applying for your internship or, you know, whatever, and just, you know, staying in contact, not, you know, too much contact in, you know, like messaging every day type thing and being a bother. But yeah, just, you know, being polite, friendly. I've definitely taken on some people into, you know, production assistant roles, you know, when we had the runners into runner positions and kind of junior positions that we've had. I've definitely seen, it's that enthusiasm, I think, is the key thing for me, is seeing someone who is enthusiastic, who says, you know, I don't know how to do this, this, and this, but I really want to learn from, you know, your team at Framestore, because I know that, you know, I'll be able to learn and whatever. So for sure, it's all of those things.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. I mean, you know, we're talking about, you know, like words like passion, enthusiasm, you know, there's a kind of almost a slant towards extrovert, but actually that's not true, is it? Because you can measure that through introverted candidates as well. I don't know whether you've got a take on that, Nikunj, in terms of that balance between, just because we're saying you have to be enthusiastic doesn't mean we're ruling out anybody who has introverted qualities. How would you chop that up, Nikunj?
I feel it totally, you know, it's based on the kind of role that you're applying for, and more than having a balance between being an extrovert or introvert, I would say, and I would again kind of add to what the girl said, and I would completely agree with them. It's basically having the right balance between your creative skills, your technical skills, and your soft skills, right? So. Yeah. And that's what recruiters in Mumbai, that's how they evaluate the candidate. These are the skills they look out for. Creativity, right, which is the most important thing in our industry. Plus, how tech savvy are you? Whether you have upgraded yourself in terms of new technologies. And again, in today's era, soft skills are very important, irrespective of the kind of industry that you're working in, irrespective of the kind of job function you're a part of. Soft skills are really, really important. Skills like communication skills, stakeholders management, problem solving. If you've got these skills, they will take you a long way in your career.
Yeah.
So it's basically just, you know, having the right balance of these qualities.
Yeah, and I'm glad you mentioned problem solving, because that is creativity, isn't it? That's how I chop up creativity personally, and feel free to disagree, folks. But I always find creativity isn't just about, I can draw, I can paint, I can create wonder. you know, it's also about actually how do I tackle this problem? How do I tackle this in a different way? Or, you know, helicopter over a potential challenge and do things differently. So I really like that you've mentioned that, Nikunj.
Very true. Being creative about solving your problems and thinking out of the box.
Yeah, totally. And the whole idea of, you know, the technical skills, which we're going to get into real advice shortly. But I imagine you're all assessing that already before you've met the person. Is that fair to say? You know, you've seen their reel, you've seen their work. So actually, is it a myth that the interview itself is purely about, as you mentioned, Lindsay, all the communication skills and all the kind of can they work well with others? Or do you delve into more of the technical prowess at interview? It's just not a pre-scripted question. I do apologize.
No problem.
I do this a lot, so I find it fascinating.
Yeah, so I mean, obviously we would have reviewed their candidacy by reviewing their reel, making sure that the skill set is there. I don't think that the interview is only about soft skills. I mean, I think they mm-hmm. do need to be able to explain their work and talk through specifically what they did on a shot or, mm-hmm. You know, we like to talk about, you know, what was your most rewarding shot or your biggest challenge. And so there's things I think that add to just the reel itself that, you know, really show where the artist is in their skill set and what they can bring to the team.
Cool. Thank you, Lindsay. Right. I'm going to hit you with two questions. They're quite simple. It's one or the other or a blend of both. So my first one is, and this is thanks to Amy Smith, actually, she helped me with this one, is CV or LinkedIn?
All right. What I personally feel is both of them hold equal importance, right? That's and I'll be very honest over here. When we talk about VFX and animation industry, especially in the Indian job market, I have seen very few people being very particular about their CV making, right? Outside in the industry, people spend a lot of time, they put a lot of thoughts into making their CVs, right? Mm-hmm. The world is growing very rapidly and it disappoints me when I get a CV of 10 pages, right?
Oh, God.
And I'm wondering to myself, is this your autobiography or it's your resume? Right? It needs to be crisp, short. Talk about significant achievements, right? I see a lot of fillers in people's CVs, right? So yes, I mean, I'm just being very honest about it. People mm-hmm. in this particular industry, our VFX industry, need to really be more conscious about CV making. That's one thing. LinkedIn, again, it's just not about putting your work on your resume. It's also about letting the world know what you've been doing. And that's where LinkedIn comes into picture, networking and promoting yourself mm-hmm. as a brand. That's where LinkedIn comes into picture. So yes, my advice would be spend time on your CV. Don't rush into it, right? Make it short, crisp, add your significant achievements. And having said that, also try and spend a little more time on LinkedIn, networking people, getting some recommendation that really helps on LinkedIn.
Okay.
So in my opinion, both of them do matter.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting. You've taken me back years talking about CVs. I used to do CV workshops when I used to work in radio. Is it still kind of two-page max, or are you trying to get it all on one page of A4? I mean, what's the general rule of thumb these days when it comes to resumes and CVs?
So the rule that I follow is it's basically experience level. That's something I would look at. If you've got about 5-7 years of work experience, it's one page. It's anywhere between 10 to 12, 13 years, 1.5 page.
Okay.
Up to 15, 20 years, 2 pages. That's about it.
Otherwise, it's not getting read. Exactly. If it's 10 pages, it's not happening.
Too much.
It's going in the out tray straight off the bat.
Who has the time to go through a 10-page
Who
CV?
Does that still? Do you still get like really lengthy? I mean, I don't know whether you're exaggerating with the 10 pages, but maybe not. I don't know. I mean, do people still?
I can share some of the samples with you.
God. Wow. Wow. Okay. Good start. Thank you, Nikunj. How about you, Annie? You know, what's your take on, you know, does the CV still hold credence in London and the UK? Or
it's down to preference as a recruiter, I feel. I think I don't personally mind as long as the information is there. You know, I want to see the key information and whether you use your LinkedIn PDF to upload or your CV. I mean, CV you can be a little bit more creative with, which is always interesting. Yeah. But also, if a CV is really mishmashy and it's hard to follow, I do get frustrated by that, because say when we're hiring en masse or we've got lots and lots of applications to get through, you know, I just want to be able to go straight to the key information. Mm. And that's where sometimes, you know, LinkedIn is very good for that, because you've got the most recent work experience at the top. You can read backwards. You can see their seniority, you know, how long they've been somewhere for, and all of those things, which just helps me as a recruiter in the way, you know, I work, seeing that information at the top. I'd say maybe the more senior you get, you know, the more into your career you are as an artist or in production, LinkedIn is all good. And then, you know, for kind of more junior people who've, you know, just starting into the industry, or, you know, been in the industry just a couple of years or so, it's nice to have a CV to show that creative side. But then we're also looking at your, you know, your portfolio if you're an artist. So that speaks volumes. I think maybe it's more important if you're in production. Yeah. And you can kind of go into a bit more detail on your CV. So yeah, it's all down to personal preference and just making sure that your application is easy to follow, because there's nothing worse than an application that's all over the place. You're just kind of thinking, oh gosh, where am I looking? You know, what am I doing? And you think I've got 100 more to screen. Yeah. So it definitely makes our lives a lot easier if it's all in order and makes sense, for sure.
I think if anyone takes anything from this episode, is the fact that you have so many CVs and profiles and reels to go through. So less is more, you know. It's just almost kind of just appreciating that fact alone, I think, will land you in good stead, right?
Yeah, for sure. Just get the key information in front of our faces so we can make a good informed-based decision on that.
Yeah,
always think about how your application is coming through to a recruiter, and if you were having to screen en masse, what bits of information would you want to see first?
Exactly, front load for sure. Thank you, Annie. Lindsay, anything to add to that? You know, do you have a similar view?
Exactly. I don't know that I'm overly concerned with how the information comes through, whether it be LinkedIn or a CV, as long as it's organized in a way that's just really easy to get that information across, as Annie said. So it really comes down to, I think, content and just being able to easily digest the content and, you know, making sure that your real link is there and preferably on your LinkedIn as well, just to make sure that it's easy for us to access.
Perfect. Brilliant. Lovely. Nicely put. Thank you. Yeah. So what I'm hearing there is it's about the info. It's about the content. Actually, this whole thing about personal preference, however you choose to do it, is completely up to you, which leads me to my next conundrum, which is cover letter or not to cover letter. So, you know, what's your take? Is that still a thing? When I hear about cover letters, I'm like, do people still write cover letters? Do people still write a whole page A4 as to why they should be considered an addition to their LinkedIn profile /CV? Could we stay with you, Lindsay, for this one, please?
Yeah. I think for me, it really depends on what the role is. I think for some roles, it's maybe more critical, where you would want to kind of have somebody explain their experience and why they're right for the role. So maybe not as critical for, say, an artist role, but, you know, maybe something that's more of a support role, you'd want to be able to explain a little bit about why your experience is a fit for that role.
Yeah.
Again, I just think avoid heavy text, because it's just really hard to digest and to take in. So if you are going to do a cover letter, I think just, again, you know, maybe a few sentences or some bullet points, something just to kind of make it easy to take in.
Economy definitely sounds like there's a theme developing here. How about you, Nikunj? What do you think about the art of the cover letter? Does it still exist in Mumbai?
All right, Simon, in my personal opinion, cover letters are old school.
Yeah.
And they are a thing of the past.
Yeah.
The world needs to move over. And let me ask you a simple question. How many people would you find making their CVs with a typewriter?
Well, I would imagine none.
Right? How many people would you see?
Depends on the generation. A few baby boomers maybe out there. Clack, 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 clack.
How many people do you find going to offices with the hard copies of their resumes, passing them on to the hiring managers? Does that happen anymore? Not really. So same goes with cover letters. In my opinion, this is my personal opinion. Again, if you still want to be specific about your interest level, and if you really want to highlight your achievements or your skills, just a cover letter can be replaced by a short write-up in the mail body itself, but I don't think they are useful anymore.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. I like that. I do agree with you, actually. When I get I go to careers events and somebody hands, I've still been handed a paper copy of a CV before, and I get help and it comes my way and I'm like, oh my God, what do I do with this? It's kind of, it's this like, you know, it's a bygone era, I think now. Back in the day, you'd go to a networking event and have your stack of business cards and a wallet full of CVs. And I think it's, or resumes for our US listeners. And yeah, it does feel, it has a pang of the old school for sure. Thank you, Nikunj.
Yep.
Anything to add on that, Annie? What's your take?
No, I do actually agree with Nikunj. He makes a good point. To be completely honest, I do tell when I'm speaking to students at uni or college who are about to graduate, I think because they might not have had any experience previously, and obviously they're trying to get their first job in industry, I think a short cover letter always helps more to express, like I said earlier, what you want to gain from this opportunity, why you'd be a good fit, and to show your enthusiasm for the job.
Yeah.
I think it can express that. But you could also put that in your CV at the top in your profile section. I think it's just, you know, there's been a lot of times, obviously entry-level applications get so many applications for entry-level jobs. And there are people who, for example, production assistant, who might not have, you know, done retail background, bar experience, whatever it might be, but in their cover letter they're able to tell me why they have an interest in film and TV, and they can kind of go into that detail a bit more, and so if I'm screening someone without a cover letter that doesn't explain that to me, and I just see retail, bar experience, whatever experience, who doesn't show an interest in film and TV, then I'm gonna pick, you know, the person with the cover letter that explains that to go through to hiring manager screen.
So it's adding some, trying to find a way to add some narrative. Again, to Lindsay's point, maybe it's depending on the role or why you're applying, rather than maybe a letter. Because when I used to do them, it used to be like, to whom it may concern, and then you would write your blurb, and then you'd print it off about 100 times and fire them out. Whereas I guess there's quite a lot of creative ways you can do that. Like Nikunj said, you do a little box at the top of the CVs, you know, just to kind of add a bit of extra flavor to the CV. Or, you know, do people do kind of weird and wacky things? Have you had some different approaches come your way when it comes to kind of people adding that narrative to why they're applying? Or are people not that creative anymore? I got sent about a physical door in the post once, which I won't get into on one of the episodes when I used to work at Channel 4. Somebody said they wanted to get their foot in the door, so they sent me a full, massive wooden front door in the post. It was bizarre, but they got our attention. Anyway, I'm going to stop there. It's mental.
Sometimes don't know if it's good attention, though.
I know.
Like that.
We had a whole debate about it at the time, and it's like, you know, there were pros and cons for sure, but yeah, you're right.
Yeah, I mean, I can't think of any now, but I've definitely had some strange applications, you know, and when you do get a funny one, you do send it to the rest of the team and you're like, gosh, read this person's cover letter, or, you know, what are they trying to say? What are they doing? So yeah, there definitely has been some quirky ones. And I think to an extent it's fine to show because of the industry that we work in, it's fun to show your side of your personality, but then you just kind of make sure that it's not too much of that, and you've got the serious,
it's risky.
It depends who's reading it, right? Because I mean, but there's definitely been some interesting applications in the past for sure, but nothing like that of sending a door.
I still remember it though. I'm talking about it on a podcast, right? Again, it's like this fascinating discussion. I mean, I think you're right, pros and cons, but I still remember that. That door, it was crazy. I don't know. Anyway, I'm regressing to my TV years. But it's interesting though, because I think Lindsay, you mentioned about kind of, you know, the skills we look for, and, you know, do we look, and characteristics as well. You know, somebody who's good humoured, enthusiastic, you know, how do you genuinely get that good humour across via LinkedIn, via a resume? It's a really interesting one. I don't know whether there have been any thoughts on that, but, you know, it's quite important when you are swathing through so many applications for so many roles. How does somebody just kind of stand out from the crowd without being corny and, I don't know, sending a paint? I mean, I've had a painted teapot before as well, which says, oh, we'd love to have a cup of tea with you, you know. It was just like, Do you have any thoughts on that, just out of interest?
I don't think I've had people be as creative, Simon, but it sounds like you've got some good stories.
I was living the recruitment dream back in the day. I know.
I don't know that there's a magic, you know, way to do it. I think ultimately, you know, you want people that are friendly and, you know, that tell about themselves. And, you know, ultimately, I think it does come down to the work as well of just, you know, as long as they're saying enough to get across, but they've got what you're looking for. That's ultimately, I think, the most important part.
Yeah, no, definitely, definitely. Thank you. Well, let's switch our focus. We'll come back to behavioral skills and soft skills, but let's switch our focus to the reel. We've mentioned the reel in the portfolio a few times already. You know, could you share some kind of just top tips, advice for folk out there, particularly those looking at tech and artist roles, for crafting a standout reel or portfolio for it to kind of catch your attention? You know, what is it you look for? What are some of the kind of best practices that you would advise on? Perhaps we can kick off with Annie on this one.
So for portfolios, obviously it comes down to, you know, your discipline and what you do, but I think it's always about how you present your portfolio is really important. There's definitely preferred platforms I prefer, such as Vimeo and ArtStation. I don't like it when people send a Google Drive link in. It comes in really long and just looks really messy on your application. And then normally you've then got a request access, which always feels a bit funny. So, so always, have a good, suitable platform. If there's no need to password protect your work, then don't. Obviously, if you've got work on there that's not for public viewing, then obviously that's completely understandable. But if you're, you know, starting off in the industry and you've just more or less got private, but your personal work to show, then why do you want to hide it from the world? Let us see it. Make it easier for a recruiter, because it's just another step to get to. And then I think it's always good to know where you're applying for as well. So obviously at Framestore we are best known for a lot of the creature photorealistic stuff that we do. So if you apply with a kind of more stylized work, then even though we will do all sorts of projects and we have done all sorts of projects, just be mindful that a lot of what we do is more to that sort of thing, and therefore it might not be worth applying at that time unless it specifically says to do so in the application. Because of that, obviously having clear breakdowns really helps to be able to see what it is that you've done in a particular shot or on an asset and so on. It really helps the hiring manager decide whether you'd make a good candidate for the role that we have open. And yeah, there's no need for music, it's always fun. I always personally enjoy listening, seeing what people's music tastes are and what they put to their reels, because there is a kind of talent to doing that. But essentially you don't need music, because a lot of the time if we're watching it in the office, the hiring manager won't be able to have access to sound, so that's also fun. But yeah, and then also include reference always if you can.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So is it kind of like almost kind of like quality over quantity, but more kind of like, don't try and wow us with, you know, amazing soundtracks and super polished end result type work. It's, you know, looking to see the breakdowns, the reference, the kind of process. It's almost the equivalent of, I went and talked about my degree earlier, Lindsay. I did an advertising graphic design degree, and actually the assessors were more interested in my sketchbooks than they were in the thing that was hanging on the wall. And it's nice to see that's still something you look for. But I imagine somebody trying to break in without that intel will think they're just going to want to see this amazing finished product. So, I mean, Lindsay, would you like to continue that?
Yeah, I think especially for more junior candidates, it's really helpful actually to see their reference, to see even their process, to kind of break down what they're doing, especially if you're, you know, maybe doing something from a more technical point of view, you can even, you know, walk us through that. I think it's really helpful actually to see process, but absolutely agree with Annie on, you know, reference and shot breakdowns. It's really, it's great to get this perfectly polished reel with all these final shots, but really we want to see what they did on the shot and make it really clear what their contribution to the shot was.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, it is definitely the quality over quantity. I've said that quite a few times when talking. Again, like, you know, Lindsay said, especially with junior artists, people will fill their reel with stuff that's not finished or doesn't look as polished. And I just wouldn't include that. Obviously, once you kind of, you know, have been doing it, you know, if you've got a career and you're in the industry, then obviously you just get the shots from the work you've done in various visual effects studios, and that kind of speaks. But it's always good to, again, you know, put your breakdown so we can really understand what aspects of that shot that you've done or asset and so on. It's really important to see.
Cool, thank you, Annie. One of my questions around reels is around front loading it. Now, years ago, I went to the VFX festival. It was pre my Framestore days. It was when I worked at the mill. And there was this advice that, you know, going back to what we said earlier, you have so many applications coming in, you don't have time to sit through every reel in its entirety. Now, are you sitting through every single reel from start to finish? Or is the advice still as it was then, front load your reel with your best stuff because we may not get to the end of it? I mean, real talk, but Nikunj, is this something you've got a view on?
I speak to a lot of hiring managers about this, Simon, and the most common thing that I get is they wouldn't expect the reels to be more than 2 minutes on an average.
Okay.
Number one. Next thing is they are all of the opinion that their best work should be projected in the next initial few seconds in the reel.
Okay.
I mean, they wouldn't want to watch a short reel, which is like 4 minutes, 5 minutes long. So on an average, 2 minutes is good enough. And just, you know, add your best work towards the beginning of the reel. And adding the breakdowns also is very, very important. Make sure there's caption added. Talk about the kind of, suppose if there's an environment. So what sort of assets were created by me if I'm an artist, right? I may not have worked on the entire shot, but I might have worked on it partially. So what is your contribution in the shot? You need to mention that on your showreel.
Okay, and how do you do that on a showreel? How do you mention that on a showreel?
By adding captions on the showreel.
Okay, cool.
For an example, if there is a Top Gun scene, I could just say this aircraft was modeled by me, or you know, okay, the background was created by me on DMP. So just be specific on your showreels and add captions.
Okay. Thank you, Nikunj. So Lindsay, yeah, so we've got best part of 2 minutes, best work in the first few seconds, and add captions on what you actually worked on. Anything to add? Agree, disagree? What's your take, Lindsay?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think having your strongest work at the beginning is a good thing. It kind of sets the tone for the reel and you kind of, you know, kind of catches your attention and you think, okay, this is, you know, so I think I would agree that it can't hurt, might help to put your best work first.
Okay, thank you. Annie, anything to add that's different or similar?
Yeah, I think it stays the same. I mean, I always watch the first, you know, shot on the reel, and then I'll click through sometimes if I can see that it's a long reel. But I do try and watch, you know, at least a good 30 seconds.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think it's, yeah, what you should put your first work at the beginning. It's going to get seen first, and that's what you want.
Yeah, right.
That's what you want to get seen first. So it just makes sense. So yeah, it might be an old school rule, but why change it if it works? So
yeah, nothing with the old school, right? It's the only school. But yeah, I completely agree with you. Yeah, it's almost the onus is on you to create a 2 minute reel that somebody is going to want to sit through, I guess, right?
If it's got good music, I might do. Depends.
Get a good tunes on. Yeah, maybe we should include the Spotify playlist suggestions at the end just to kind of sway what people put on their reels going forward. Can we move to education quickly, if that's okay? I mean, there's a lot to get through. And again, we have part two coming as well on Thursday, where we can continue this conversation, particularly around portfolios and reels. But there's a lot of conversation going on at the moment around kind of self-taught versus higher education. You know, how important is it for the candidates that you see to have a specialized degree or some kind of certification in visual effects or animation? Or, you know, do the self-taught folk have a look in as well? I mean, Nikunj, can we kick off with you on this one, please?
What I personally feel is, the kind of people that we hire, creative skills are of the utmost importance. So degree or a specialized education could be more of a booster or a catalyst in your career journey. But lack of it could also not be a hurdle if you do not have a formal degree in animation or VFX. It may not be a bottleneck in your career or a choke point. But yeah, all that matters is you got to be passionate about the work and hungry to learn. And yeah, that's about it. So yeah, to, just to sum it up, degree would be more of a booster or a catalyst, but it's not the most important thing.
Okay. So we're back to the P word again, passion, which we know we broke down at the start. But so you're saying that you know, the education piece is kind of like the seasoning on the work. Ultimately, if the person's got the passion and got and has the has the skills to pay the bills, right? They've created something that has got your attention. So actually, you're saying the education piece is not necessarily as important as it probably was maybe 10 years ago.
Yeah, it could be the cherry on top.
The cherry, I like that. Much better analogy than my seasoning. How about you, Annie? What's your thoughts around self-taught versus education?
Yeah, we have plenty of employees at Framestore who've self-taught, who I'm always in amazement of, because I think, how did you manage to teach yourself that? But, you know, you look online and the tools are there for you to learn. And if you have the passion, then you'll find those tools out there online, you'll network with people. Mm-hmm. I was speaking to a self-taught comper the other day on interview, who just reached out to compositors on LinkedIn and got feedback and made notes and used his knowledge to go and find tools online to help him learn. And now he's in the industry. So yeah, sometimes I have a look at it, like I'll see where they studied, because it's just an interesting thing. And you do in the back of your mind know that some courses in certain universities have particularly high quality churnout of grads, so it's always interesting to see. But there are people at Framestore self-taught who are amazing, and I'm always in awe of them and think, wow, you really do have the passion to do that rather than someone teaching you, you've done it yourself, which is incredible.
Having been through the apprenticeship program, both with my time previously in my former company at the mill and at Framestore, you see these amazing young people who are like 16, 17 plus, who are completely got themselves Blender when they were kind of 14 years old, and world-class environment work, whatever they're doing, it's absolutely nuts. And that's why I think the apprenticeship program is such an interesting important part of the launchpad.
It is the young ones as well that always blow my mind, because there's I know Amy Smith, she was talking to a person who was very young, like early teens, and getting and really wanted to be an environment artist. And I was thinking, how do you know that at that age? How do you know? it's just incredible. And Amy was kind of mentoring this person and helping them. I'm not sure, what's happened. So I need to catch up with Amy about that story. But she'd always just say, so-and-so's messaged again. Mm-hmm. They've managed to do this and they've sent me this work. And I was thinking, and they're how old? Like, that's incredible.
Oh, it's nuts. So, yeah. Well, with the Axis VFX work that we do separate, is Young Animator of the Year in the UK. And every year, the standard of those young people who are completely, some of them are still at school, creating this incredible work. It's insane. If anybody has time to check that website out, the Young Animator of the Year website, it's nuts. I mean, all the videos are on there, and it's everything from kind of like almost claymation, stop motion, to this super high tech, almost something straight out of the Animatrix or something. It's insane. Terrifying talent out there, folks, for sure. Lindsay, I don't want to leave you out. Self-taught versus degree. What's your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I mean, I think self-taught certainly shows drive. I think, it's going to come down to the individual on what they do with that versus as Annie said, there are certain programs that are kind of noted for producing a certain level of graduate. Mm. I do think I see a lot of, within the actual courses that are available, there are some that are certainly more industry relevant than others. And so even some of the degrees that are out there, it doesn't feel that somebody could in some of them, finish that program and walk into an artist role. A lot of them are much more broad, I've seen. And so, again, I think it comes down to the quality of the course and how specific it is to, you know, what department you're looking to go into. And so, you know, again, if somebody's teaching a very generalist course, we're not very generalist in our departments. And so, you know, do they have the level of expertise to walk into an animator role or a compositor role or an environment artist role? You know, so even those that have gone to certain courses, you know, I think it really does depend on the course.
I was asked this question recently, and my answer was very much to your point, Lindsay, is, you know, it's all about the work at the end of the day. And you've got people who are self-taught, some are incredible, some probably aren't. And the same with the university, or they might have gone through an institution like Escape Studios, where they've come out the other end and they're absolutely smashing it, or actually it might not be for them. So I think there's lots, everybody has their own arc, right? But it's an interesting conversation. And I think what's quite exciting is the access to free software now, and access to, you know, endless YouTube tutorials. I mean, you could teach yourself pretty much anything, let alone VFX. You could learn the guitar or the piano, couldn't you, in a couple of weeks? So really, really interesting conversation, but, you know, time is money, and I've got more questions to ask you. My next question is around pitfalls and some of the common mistakes you see. I think it's quite an important question to ask, particularly for our listeners, and the type of things to avoid. We've already talked about some of the things to avoid on CVs and reels, but are there any common pitfalls that you come across which will help our prospective candidates better prepare for interview or applications?
I've got one.
Go on then.
So it's always just a little awkward if you're, you know, chatting away and the candidate mentions, you know, a project that perhaps wasn't done by Framestore.
Ooh, ouch.
Yeah. So I think it's always just important to, you know, before every interview you have, just do a little bit of research, know who you're speaking to, you know, understand the projects that the studio has worked on. Yeah, it is a common mistake. Well, not common, but it has happened to me a few times, and I just kind of brush over it, but I'm thinking, that's not one we did. So I think it's just being prepared for your interview. As well, like, you know, now post-COVID, before COVID, all of our interviews were face-to-face. Now post-COVID, they're all done online virtually. You know, things like having clear connection, you know, Wi-Fi connection, having your camera turned on and not using a mobile phone. I've had that a few times. People just out and about on the street, just chatting away. And I'm thinking, I'm not your friend, you know, I'm not your mate that you're just having a chat with. This is an interview. And that can be really off-putting for us, because it, you know, you can kind of lose your train of thought because there's background noise, all of that stuff. So really do think about, yeah, making sure that you're able to communicate clearly and, it's still important to present yourself well in interview, because that then portrays those sort of soft skills that we mentioned before. Yeah. It's really important. So yeah, those are my few
thanks, Annie.
Ones to note.
And presenting yourself well, I agree with you, by the way. Something I bang on about a lot on our presentation skills and personal impact workshop is almost, it's more important when you are in a virtual kind of box that we're all in at the moment, right? You know, do you have any kind of, perhaps a question for Lindsay Ornikunj around when we can't read body language, because, you know, all you've got is face, shoulders, ideally. I mean, some people just are the floating head, aren't they? And we've seen that happen before. But, you know, is there something that people need to be aware of? How can they better prepare for interviews when they are literally not shaking your hand in the flesh? You know, you're literally clicking a button and appearing on somebody's screen. You know, what tips and advice do you have for the virtual world we are now in?
Yeah, I think it is that little bit more challenging, I think, to really connect with somebody virtually. But, you know, I think trying to bring a personal touch to it, and, you know, maybe making sure you have questions prepared so you can get that more conversational tone to the interview, kind of, you know, maybe towards the end, you know, good eye contact, you know, just trying to make sure that you're being seen to be present and, you know, engaged in the conversation. Like Annie said, you know, I think just making sure that you don't have other distractions that can really detract from what you're actually trying to say.
Yeah, yeah. One bit of best practice, put some kind of mascot on your camera, some or post-it note to say, look here. So you're not looking at yourself and checking your kind of hair's all sorted, but you're actually looking at the camera to, you know, perform the illusion of eye contact, right? It's some good top tips there for sure. And, you know, backgrounds as well. Right? I mean, all of your backgrounds are great, by the way. I'm loving Annie's Easter egg product placement in the background. That's very,
my
very
cat was featuring a little bit earlier.
And the
as
cat,
well.
Of course, very on brand. But I'm sure you've had some horror show backgrounds in the past. I mean, you've had obviously already, Annie, you've mentioned on the street, but you know, I'm sure you've had quite a lot of unmade beds or people's kind of underwear kind of drying in the background. I'm getting some knowing nods.
Yep, some messy bedrooms, yes. Exactly. But, you know, there's the option, you know, on some platforms that we use, you know, there is the option to kind of blur it out and old use a virtual background. I'm always a fan of using a virtual background depending on the season or the time of year. If there's a celebration, you know, I like to use those. I think it, and it also, you know, having those virtual backgrounds or something to talk about, you know, can kind of ease the conversation in if you're waiting for the hiring manager to join.
Oh,
it's always,
nice.
You know, helpful to kind of start having a topic to discuss and making it feel like a more natural conversation rather than a regimented interview. I always prefer the natural approach.
Nice to have some kind of conversation anchor. I think the, like you say, the backgrounds are good. Maybe avoid the special effects when you're like a talking potato or something. That might be a bit off-putting. But don't go too wacky. But I love that. Thank you, Annie. Nikunj, anything to add to the kind of the pitfalls that perhaps you've seen in the past or anything you would recommend people do more of when it comes to interviews?
Talking about the common mistakes, I think just to add up to whatever Lindsay and Annie spoke about, not only in VFX industry, but for most of the creative roles, I've seen plagiarism being practiced when it comes to work portfolio. So it's a strong no, just avoid doing that, right? Sometimes just to impress the interviewer, a lot of candidates, you know, end up plagiarizing their work portfolio, right? I mean, avoid doing that, right? Just be original, I would say. Just use your own work. The thing is, there's a thin line between confidence and overconfidence, and people need to understand that, right? So just make sure you're confident, but don't go overboard.
Okay, thank you, Nikunj. And a quick question for all of you on this kind of area, which is quite an important one, is if somebody needs additional support, you know, whether they want captions turned on or maybe they're uncomfortable being on a screen because not everybody always wants to be, you know, might be having a, I don't know, whatever the reason, you know, what should they do? Should they ask you for support and help in advance? Is that on the agenda? I see you nodding there, Annie.
Yep. Yeah, definitely. I did a call the other day with someone who needed the captions turned on. So I would obviously much prefer someone to tell me if there's any assistance that they need, if they need help with anything, if they are feeling nervous or worried, if they want to have a quick phone call before, just so we can have a chat so they feel like there's a friend in the room. Because obviously as a recruiter, I think that is a big part of our role in an interview.
Yeah.
We're there to kind of host the call and kind of kick things off and make sure the conversation stays on track and so on. And the hiring manager there is really to kind of, you know, ask those kind of nitty gritty questions and get the key information out to make a good call, whether they'd be suitable to hire or not. But, you know, we're there to kind of make sure that everything moves and flows nicely as well. So, you know, I want them to feel comfortable because you don't perform at your best if you're nervous or worried. You know, whatever might happen. So it's really important that if you are worried or if there is something that we should know about, that you tell us and don't be scared to tell us. Because if someone, you know, if a recruiter did get back to you and said, oh no, you know, that doesn't work for us or something, then you probably wouldn't want to work for the company, to be completely honest. We're always there to help and facilitate and ease the process for you, for sure. So definitely speak out. For sure.
That's good. It's good to hear. Like, gone are the days of the old school grilling, you know, where it's like you put the candidate under pressure, see how they perform. Actually, you're not doing you or them any favours by doing that, right? So reach out. Absolutely. Anything different in Melbourne and Mumbai, Nikunj and Lindsay? Or would you second that?
Yeah, second that 100%.
Same here. We always have recruiters accompanying the interviewer whenever we have virtual interviews being conducted, and they're always happy to help. Mm-hmm. One common challenge our candidates face here is understanding the accent, right? And that's where recruiters come into picture, you know, whether it's just helping them understand what the interviewer is trying to say. Mm-hmm. So that's one common challenge they face. So yeah, but apart from that, other if there's a technical issue or anything else, recruiters are always accompanying the interviewer.
Okay. Cool. No, thank you, Nikunj. Definitely. I think, yeah, so the common theme here is just to speak up and ask, and there's no shame in asking for support, right? Regardless whether it's, you know, whether it's accents or support or captions or anything, right? So I think it's, I love that friend in the room kind of analogy. I think that's really cool. Thank you for sharing that. Okay, so we're nearly at the end of our part one, and we've got a lot more questions for our US and Canadian recruiters. But I wanted to quickly talk about kind of trends, evolving trends in industry and how it affects recruitment. And what are some of the key kind of technologies and trends that you believe candidates should at least have some aware of coming into industry? You know, what do you think they need to have under their belt when they're considering a role in visual effects? Nikunj, could you kick us off, please?
Now, in our industry, we work with a lot of technologies, and only thing with technology is it just keeps getting upgraded very, very rapidly. So one trend I would advise job seekers to be aware of is keep yourself upgraded in terms of the technology. Plus, make sure you educate yourself on the latest technologies coming into the industry. Like right now, Unreal Engine is the big thing, right? Just to give you an example. And I see a lot of personal projects done by some of the artists, and they put it up on LinkedIn, and it looks really beautiful, right? So, mm-hmm. so yeah, they got to be upgraded on the technology and the latest versions, I would say.
Okay, cool. So Unreal Engine is a big one. How about you, Lindsay? Anything people need to be abreast of before coming in?
Well, I think it would be probably quite department specific for most of the technologies. I guess one thing I would say, especially to more junior candidates, is I guess for me anyway, LinkedIn is still kind of where it's at from actually finding the job. So I know that we do post on Instagram, and you know, we're working on TikTok, but at least so far, I still think, you know, juniors coming into the industry need to have an up-to-date and thorough LinkedIn and add your reel. So from that side of things, you know, I still think that's where the bulk of jobs are.
Okay, cool. So LinkedIn's where it's at. You heard it here from Lindsay Cowie. How about you, Annie, before we move on to my next question, any thoughts on the technology piece?
Yeah, so with tech, I mean, I just agree with Nikunj. There's lots of new things flying about, and obviously it's always good to be knowledgeable of those and have some sort of understanding. Doesn't mean that you need to be able to use them inside and out, but I think, yeah, definitely be aware of the technology that is out there. Mm-hmm. And then in terms of the trends, I actually feel that sometimes LinkedIn can sometimes be a little bit out of date, or the job places can be a little bit out of date. I'm finding more and more, and mainly probably because Framestore has recently done this, but the VFX studios, you know, the bigger they are, becoming big brands, so they're investing more time and money into things such as their websites. So those websites are really up to date now. So I think it's always important, actually, you know, looking on there for the most recent and live job roles and the job boards, and seeing where the team's going to be, so you can see what events they're going to be at, what projects they've most recently been working on, all of that stuff. So definitely I always say to people, have, you know, in your pinned tabs have the careers page of all the companies that you would want to work for open, and just refresh those every day for when jobs come up and for when new information, you know, is there out there for people, because quite often we're sitting on projects that we can't talk about because of NDAs course. And you know, when it goes to public knowledge and all of that stuff, and then all of a sudden one day you refresh and it's a whole new page. So
And it totally feeds into everything we've spoken about around research and knowing your stuff, as you said earlier, Annie, make sure you're kind of referencing projects that we've actually worked on and not just rinsing and repeating something that you've maybe done at a previous studio. So really, really good stuff in there. And the networking thing about get to events. And when we say get to events, it doesn't always mean a physical event, right? A lot of these events are webinars now. So just, you know, pop in on a webinar, listen, soak up all of those trends that you can kind of drop into an interview to sound like you know your stuff. I think really good. You've all not mentioned artificial intelligence. So I'm going to ask one AI related question. We're not going to get into the annals of AI because it is a big, there's a whole episode there, but I'm going to ask you about ChatGPT, which is very relevant to recruitment. And my only question is, you know, can you spot a ChatGPT engineered cover letter? Going back, a call back to our cover letter question, but Lindsay, have you got tools now where you can spot when somebody's just gone, write me a cover letter to Framestore, click, and it appears?
Probably. I don't know if I've actually, encountered one that I've thought, you know, definitely is. I don't know, Annie, are you a bit more?
For me, I think it's obvious if you've, you know, got a piece of text from ChatGPT and, you know, unless you haven't tweaked it, which I think is the important thing to do, you can use it as a tool, but obviously tweak it, tailor it to sound authentic, to make it feel like it's, you know, something you would write as well. So yeah, I think it is obvious because of almost how like perfect it sounds or comes across. It's like someone's, you know, that's been made of on a computer. So yeah, I think we've seen it a few times, but I think it's okay to do that. I'm not saying you shouldn't. I just think if you are going to do that, because some people aren't, you know, don't feel themselves as people who can write, you know, articulately or, you know, have that strong punctuation spelling skills. So I think, yeah, it's a tool to help you. So, you know, use it, but just make sure to then go over it and make it your own, and make it authentic, rather than just copying and pasting what the computer churned out.
I was going to use the A word, you know, make it authentic, you know, make it, you know, tailor it so it sounds like you. I see them on LinkedIn all the time where it's like, we are really energized about this opportunity. Like all these like really over inflated
extravagant words
that are linked to excitement. We are thrilled and energized to be in this position. I just think it is lots of emojis on the posts. But it must be hard to kind of find some of them that have been crafted. But yeah, like you say, if they're just kind of copied and pasted, yeah, they're quite easy to spot, aren't they? And Nikunj, do you come across any ChatGPT engineered cover letters or CVs?
Not very often, but yes, once in a blue moon, we do come across emails or CVs that are written with the assistance of ChatGPT as well. I would just say whenever you come across a text which uses a lot of jargons and a lot of standard templates and flowery language, as Annie rightly said, like it looks very perfect, like absolutely perfect. Yeah. The high chances it's been made with ChatGPT.
It's a hard one, isn't it? Maybe somebody's just really articulate and then they think we're giving them a bad name because of ChatGPT. It's a toughie.
I don't think it's ChatGPT, but I know there's a LinkedIn form letter that I've received a lot. And, you know, when somebody sends that, I think, well, I have no idea what your actual communication skills are like because I've seen this form letter 100 times. So try to avoid the form letter.
I know, dear insert studio here type stuff. All right. Well, thank you for being on the podcast, folks. We're going to finish with one big final question, which I'm going to ask all of our recruiters, particularly on part two as well. It's just about advice. Now, this is full of advice. Of course it is, this last hour or so. But what advice would you give to someone listening who's aspiring, who's looking to get into Framestore or passionate about joining industry? Now, what is the kind of key bit of, what's the golden nugget? If you could only deliver one piece of advice, what would it be? Lindsay, do you want to start us off? You know, what's a great piece of advice for our budding Framestorians?
Yes, I think focus on what you want to be doing. So even if it's not what you are doing yet, I think showcase what you know so far, what you're working on, you know, the software that you know, and really focus on where you want to be and use any transferable skills. So whether you've worked in a deadline-driven environment or, you know, a stressful situation, things like that. So I think, try to focus on where you want to be and, you know, what you have so far that applies.
Yeah, and I love that you've mentioned transferable skills, because there might be people out there who perhaps this is their first gig in industry. I mean, Nikunj, you spoke to this earlier for yourself, as you'd never worked in visual effects, but you know, what are the skills, those communication, collaboration skills that we've mentioned already that you can kind of weave into those applications? I think it's a huge one. So thank you for mentioning that, Lindsay. And some great advice as well. Know what you want. How about you, Nikunj? What's your big go-to nugget of advice for our listeners?
A couple of things I would mention. Number one is focus on upskilling and making a better version of yourself every day. Mm-hmm. Self-learning, very, very important. So keep upskilling and learning. Stay hungry to learn. That's my advice. And second thing would be keep networking with people.
Yeah.
Right? This industry is more like a close-knit fraternity, right? Mm-hmm. And so you've got to make genuine relationships with your, industry fellow workers, co-workers, right? Network around with people. Even for an example, when you're exploring opportunities and if you reach out to your friend who's working with a studio and pass on your application through your friend, there are higher chances of your application being reviewed rather than just, it's being sent out to recruiters randomly. So just network a lot and just meet people, talk to people, whether it could be on social media platforms or through industry events like ANSI VFX Summit. But yeah, do a lot of networking.
Yeah.
And yes, I mean, I don't want to sound like I'm hard selling, but if you're looking for an opportunity which has great work-life balance, and if you really want to accelerate your career growth, I think we are the right place. Yeah, this is where we reframe the possible by combining talent and technology.
Oh, brand language, I like it. Amazing. Thank you for reframing the possible there, Nikunj. And yeah, it's a people business, right? That's what Visual Effects is. It's a people business. True. You only got to look at all of those credits at the end of any show, episodic, feature, commercial. It's all people, people, people. Annie, what's your big go-to nugget that you're going to drop?
So I think, my biggest advice is if you're wanting to work in, the film and TV industry on these amazing shows and projects that we work on, is have an understanding of how it works in a VFX studio, and then look at your craft and think, is it relevant to the studio and what do I need to focus on? Really, it's really about peeling it back to what you have, what qualities and skills you have, mm-hmm. if they're relevant, and then making sure that you kind of tailor yourself to a studio. So at Framestore, we have some extremely skilled people who do very specific things. So have a think about the things that you really enjoy doing that you want to do, and then, create work that portrays that. And then once you become this amazing artist, I think it's important to kind of stay humble, going into conversations with people, and just having a level of humbleness about you, showing that you're still wanting to learn. As Nikunj said, you're still learning every day, even if you're a senior or a supervisor. A lot of our seniors and supers are like, I'm learning all this tech information from these young juniors coming in. They're teaching me how to use this piece of software. So it's always evolving. So at Framestore, yes, you've got your junior artists and you've got your supervisors at the other end, but everyone is treated and respected the same. So I think being humble is really important, and there's not really room for people who think that they're bigger or better. So I think that's an important trait, and that's something I always look out for in interview, is how someone represents themselves, and whether they make a good teammate. Because you've got to work with this person, and you want to have good interactions, get the work done, and have a happy time doing it.
Yeah, I think that humility is so important. I think the any project doesn't live and die by that one creative, almost kind of fevered ego. It's got to be the sum of its parts, right? It's got to be that team collaborative effort. I think it's really, really key. So humility, humbleness, I love it. And that definitely feeds into authenticity as well, which I love. Thank you. Thank you so much, everyone. That was a great conversation. So many questions to get through, and we're already well over running. But I just wanted to kind of let you shout out. And this is where the podcast will be out of date if anybody's listening to this in a year's time. These probably roles won't be available. They might be. You never know. They might be evergreen. But is there anything you're actively recruiting for, considering this podcast will go out next week? Yeah. What is it? Would you want to plug any roles? Is there anything you want to shout about? Annie, maybe we can start with you.
So I have an expression of interest open for production. I think there's a lot of expression of interest open because we're kind of forecasting and see that there's positions coming up, but we just need to be sure that those positions are available. So yeah, production. And then I'm always looking for compass because even if I finish one round of hiring, I know that it won't be long until I get asked to hire again. Yeah, production and comp at the moment. But generally, you know, throughout the year, all of my departments, I'm sure, will open up and need some new hires to step in.
Cool. Well, you can find Annie on LinkedIn. Drop her a note. Make it interesting, you know, get her attention, everything we talked about today. Brilliant. Thank you, Annie. What about Unikunj? Anything you're actively looking for in India at the moment?
All right. One of the hot jobs is animation leads, animation being one of our newest departments that has been launched in Framestore Mumbai. We've got a great team and we are furthermore scaling this team up, expanding the team. So yes, we're looking out for awesome animation leads. Apart from that, we are always looking out for great CFX leads. And yeah, in the next couple of months, again, bricking is a new department that we've launched. Layout is something that we've launched. It's a new department. We might have opportunities in these departments as well.
Okay, great. So lots of speculative conversations to be had there. Yeah, layout, CFX and anim leads. Brilliant. Nikunj, also on LinkedIn. I'll share your profile links in the show notes as well, so everybody knows how to...
Absolutely. We're all highly active on LinkedIn, so people can hit us up over there.
All I see on my LinkedIn now. The algorithms have got me. I see your regular features on my feed, all three of you. And Lindsay, finally, anything you want to plug for Melbourne?
Yeah, I think we're probably in a similar position with everyone else that it's likely we could ramp up across the board soon, but we're kind of... finalizing everything. But yeah, animation, CFX, potentially environments could get busy. So, comp always has the possibility to go crazy. So we'll see. But animation's kind of our big focus at the moment.
Amazing. Thank you, Lindsay. And thank you, all of you, Annie, Nikunj, and Lindsay. You've been brilliant guests. I hope you've enjoyed the experience. I know our listeners will very much value this. Like I say, this is our first externally focused Framestore podcast, a historic moment. I mean, they all technically are externally focused, but usually there's an inward focus. So this is great. This has been really cool. I never know how to end these. So I'm not going to ask you. I'm tempted to ask you for your Spotify playlist recommendations, but maybe I won't do that to you at this early/late hour. So we're just going to say goodbye from the Framestore podcast. We're back on Thursday with our colleagues in Canada and the US. So until that time comes, goodbye from the Framestore podcast. And thank you, Nikunj, Lindsay and Annie. You've been brilliant.
Thanks, Simon.
Thank you.
Well, that concludes this week's episode. A massive thank you to Annie, Lindsay and Nikunj for offering such excellent careers advice and an incredibly supportive steer to anyone listening that's currently open to work. As always, a big shout out to Sam Sosnowski from the Global Training Team for the excellent editing job once again. We'll be back on Thursday with the second half of our Bumper Recruitment Special, where we head to Canada and the USA to hear from Kathleen Ruffalo, US Recruitment Manager, Julia Marone, Head of Recruitment, Canada, and Margot Ingratia, Montreal-based recruiter. We will see you then.